Hey, wonderfuls, welcome to episode 429 of the JV Club Boys of Summer with my wonderful guest, Dan Cummins. We had a very, very lively and fun chat. Also, just taking a second to remind people that if you are a fan of Avatar The Last Airbender, I do host a new podcast for Nickelodeon with my dear friend, Dante Bosco, otherwise known as Prince Zuko, called Braving the Elements. You can get it wherever you get podcasts. And if you have never seen Avatar, but you've been thinking about it because all of your friends and relatives have told you you're missing out, what a perfect time to start watching. All right, enjoy this episode with Dan, and I'll talk to you next week. I'm so glad that we have made this work.
Sorry.
You know what? Let me say this. I feel like because, you know, I podcast a lot of people that I do already know. And
yeah.
I podcast people, of course, that I don't already know. But I think that the sort of proving ground of having not, like, of having a slip up work happen, and then like the relationship that you build from finding out how someone responds to that,
right,
is like, that's like a mini friendship got set up because you had the opportunity to show me that you're adorable and nice and kind and apologetic.
That's nice.
Do you know what I mean? Like, if that hadn't happened, I don't know, I would have come in a lot even colder in terms of, like,
sure,
you know, how much I know Dan. And I mean, I'm familiar with you and your podcasts, and I fell into a little bit of a deep dive on your history page, just because it's such a journey, like everything that you experienced is there, and it's very transparent. And I thought that was really cool also, because I feel like people get a lot of sort of inspiration and reassurance from reading about people that they admire, that they listen to or whatever, kind of going like, hey, this is
yeah, I think transparency,
I'm a human being and it's a
yeah,
rocky road, and
yeah,
you're not alone, and you know what I mean?
I think transparency is so good, and that and transparency with like you know, like a kind of circling back to apologies, I'm always amazed in interactions when you have an interaction with somebody and the mistake has been made and it's not that big of a deal. But
right,
they won't apologize, and how uh-huh, infuriating that is. And it's such a simple thing that so many people don't seem to understand.
Yeah.
It's like, I've been having a customer service thing recently, with this boat of all things, like the most first world problem. But
right,
but the customer service people I interact with, they will just do the weirdest things, like an appointment will come and go that was supposed to happen, and then they just won't do it. Like, they just won't.
Yeah.
Honor the appointment, and then I'll email a couple days later. I'm like, hey, I thought the appointment, you know, and it's in the email channel, try to be really nice. I thought, you know, you guys were picking it up on Tuesday at 9. And then like 6 hours later, we'll go by like, oh yeah, some stuff came up. And then when do you want to do it now? But it's like, there's never like a, oh, I'm so sorry. And through a series of interactions of that now over a few months, it's like, I loathe them. I'm like, oh, I can't stand you people. Like, and all you had to do was just say,
I get it,
I messed up. And then I'd be like, totally cool, we all mess up. But
I know.
But people just don't learn that.
Exact same thing happen. Exact same thing happen with a new dishwasher.
Okay.
So again,
yeah,
another first world problem.
But it's still annoying.
But it's the same thing. It was like, you tried one way. There's like 8 different ways you can get to my house in my neighborhood. And they went one way and they were like, it was too narrow for the truck.
And then they just left.
And then they just left. No one called. No one said like, is there a different way to go? And then just the whole process of trying to get it rescheduled and trying to get anyone to care, and like everyone just sort of pushed the blame down into some other territory. And so no one actually ever apologized. They didn't even apologize that someone else screwed up.
Right.
It was like, oh yeah, you'll have to talk to this as a department. Like, we didn't have to. Well, that was the driver's decision, blah, blah, blah. Like, oh, you're not even.
Right.
You're not even saying, I'm sorry that happened, even though it wasn't my fault. Like, you can't even do that.
And
it was crazy.
And I wonder, does that come from just plain old rudeness, insecurity, a lack of, you know, the ability to think in kind of complex ways that I don't think are that complex, but I guess a little complex. Like, are some people just like, this is how I do my thing. And then when it doesn't work out that way, can't do it now. Or are they just like, I don't care. You know, just like truly just like rude, just like whatever, not my problem. Or yeah. or like the reluctance to apologize and accept blame. I'm like, what kind of households are a lot of people being raised in? Are they being raised in one where they make one mistake and then like some like Lifetime movie angry dad is like, what are you doing? You moron! You know, and then they're traumatized and now they just can't apologize because they feel like re-victimized. I don't get it.
You know what? We could move on from this in a second, but I will add to these theories because I think they're all very interesting and compelling. I will also add, and this is like, I can't believe I'm about to make this incredibly inappropriate comparison.
Yes.
But you know how, like, the cops, one of the problems with cops is that they racial profile or they just, like, person profile based on, I have tattoos or, you know, I'm in a shitty car or whatever. Like, and they have just enough experiences that they feel justified having that. And so that's obviously a much bigger problem with much direr consequences. But if you're in customer service, do you just kind of hate everyone because there are just enough people who were like, and I want to talk to your manager right now and blah blah blah. And like there was a scuff on the thing.
Right.
And if there's just like that's the filter you put on whether or not it's a person like you or
me
who like I'm apologizing before that can even I'm so sorry that I that you missed this appointment. But
you know what? I bet there is a lot of that. And you know, and actually it's like I have friends who are cops and it's like they have to fight that where if you're dealing with someone always being angry with you day after day, it gets so easy just to hate everyone because you're like, oh, this is going to be another negative interaction. And it's funny. I tell my kids, I'm like, whenever you get pulled over, whatever like that, be so nice, just out the gate. And we had, for everyone's good.
For your safety, for everyone, for everyone. Everyone potentially wins.
I had, you know, this year we had like our security system went off. And a cop was over there in like a few minutes checking on it. It was just like a faulty battery, but we didn't know we were out of town. And I was just like thanking him on the phone. And he was just like, well, yeah, then that's just my job or whatever. But I was like, it meant a lot to us because we were out of town. They made us feel like, oh, no, there's no problem. When I got back into town, I mean, it's so stereotypical. And I talked to some friends. I'm like, is this cheesy? But they're like, no, it's still nice. I went and got donuts, which I know is like out of a stupid movie. Uh-huh. But I didn't know what else to get. And I got a gift card for a coffee shop and I got donuts. And I brought it to the station. I literally thought the lady was going to cry when she got it because like they have that experience so rarely where someone's like, hey, just appreciated what you did, wanted to be nice. And I found that like at the airport, I remember like we try to say, you know, please, thank you, be very patient. Same thing. This one lady, it was like a flight delay. And I was like, yeah, it happens. I fly a lot. You know, I get it. You know, really like easy. And same thing. I thought she was going to cry. Because I think she probably had like 50 people before be like, I gotta get, listen, my grandma's birthday is in 2 hours. So maybe, you know, I like that you brought that up because I didn't think about that in terms of my interaction with like some recent repair things.
Yeah.
You know, from my point of view, I am being really nice, but I have to remember that on their side, I don't know the 60 people who they dealt with before me.
Right.
And if all those people were like, listen, you fucking idiot. You know, like, and they're just like, oh, oh. now that's their default. You know?
Exactly.
That's good to keep in mind.
And I'm at the point now too, where like, even if I have had situations where like, this is, sort of a heavy thing to, but
yeah.
I'm saying a heavy thing, but it is one of the lighter sides of the heavy thing that I've had to deal with. But my mom died in February.
I'm sorry.
And thank you. And there's just a lot of bullshit that comes along with like there's so much bureaucracy and so much frustration. And why does it have to be tied to you losing one of the most important people in your life?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? And so there's a lot of emotion there. And there are so many times where, you know, that trigger point is so much lower when you have to keep talking about how your mom died. And so I've Like, I verbal vomit, like, in the handful of times I've had that I've been very upset.
Right.
And I've been like, I can't believe I have to call them again about this.
Right.
Like, I so quickly am like, I just want to say, first of all, that I know it's not your fault. It's just a very emotional time for me. I just want to say again, I can't emphasize enough. I know this isn't your fault. I know we're just meeting for the first time right now. But if I'm already a little bit, if I'm like turned up to 11, it's just please understand that this is very, and they're like so nice.
I love
like,
that.
I can't even imagine. Like, I know. And then often that, you know, creates like a personal connection with somebody because they have gone through something like that,
mm-hmm.
or they have, you know, there's someone they know. So like, and just to be able to say like, oh God, this, I'm sure this is just the worst.
Yeah.
Like that just takes me down back to zero. Like once all it takes, like you said, all it takes is someone saying like, oh God, I lost my dad a few years ago. And I totally remember how awful this was. Like, I feel your pain. All of a sudden I'm like, you know what? I'm actually okay.
I think.
Like, thank you.
I think that's.
I feel all right now.
I think that's such a smart thing. I wish my wife was here because she makes fun of me all the time for oversharing, in situations out in public. She's always like,
I'm an oversharer.
She's like,
too.
She takes me aside. She's like, they don't care.
I know.
They don't need to know that. And I'm like, I know they don't. But I want them to understand that I'm trying to. This is where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
You know, those kind of things. And I would rather have somebody think that I'm a little crazy and neurotic.
Yes.
But nice.
Yes, then, yes, then, yes, yes.
Then have someone just think I'm just another faceless, cold asshole in a sea of that. Yeah.
And you never know, like, I mean, this is something, of course, somebody who does that would think this, you and me.
Yeah.
But, like, you never know what that's going to lead to. And I do feel like I've made connections with people over the dumbest thing in that moment, just because, like, I bothered to sort of go, I probably shouldn't tell you this, blah, blah, or whatever. Like, you know, they're those little gems.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they are kind of worth for other people being like, yeah, all right, she's okay. She's still talking.
Such a real moment.
Okay.
So human.
Yes.
And I feel like my mom told me this years ago, but she, you know, worked as a bank teller. And you just get treated like, in a lot of customer service, you know, positions, you just get treated like you're not a human. Like, you're just this robotic humanoid kind of vision of the corporation that someone's frustrated with or dealing with.
Right.
And people don't talk to you like they would talk to a friend or whatever. And she would always, like, in a store, she would just notice the name tag and just make that little adjustment of actually saying their name. And just like, you know, like, how are you doing? Good, Susan. How are you doing today? And it kind of takes people aback sometimes, which is sad because that means they're not used to it. But I think those little things are so important. I always think about the butterfly effect. Where it's like, if someone's having such a terrible day and you just have that weird little moment and you make a weird little connection, that could truly turn their day around, which then could lead to them being nicer to somebody else, you know, which could turn their day around, you know, and on and on.
100%. Now, remind me, I feel like, first of all, and I say this with all love and due respect to both New Jersey and New York, but I don't know that many friends of mine from those areas that would have said any of the things that you and I just said. So I'm wondering if part of it is like...
I know what you're saying. Yes.
But it's very like Midwest. A lot of people think I'm from the Midwest or I'm Canadian. I'm from Arizona. Yet I do feel that many Arizonans are very similar in that way. But they don't, and they might think I was Southern if I had a Southern accent.
Yeah,
that's also very hospitable. Like, you make a connection with people. And I know where you're from, but I can't.
Oh, it's okay.
Remember.
It's Idaho.
So do you feel like
a Northwest Idaho?
Yeah. Okay. So there you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
And you know, and I'm from a really small town, and I think not that everybody obviously in the West and the Midwest is from small towns. There's plenty of big cities. But my theory is maybe there's more people who recently moved from small towns or their parents lived in small towns. Because there is a different thing if you're in a smaller area. I think about this where, like, in Philly or Boston or New York, if you have an encounter with a stranger, you don't like them, it's so easy to, like, okay, like, if flipping somebody off in traffic, you could flip somebody off and fuck you, buddy. And then odds are you're never, ever going to see them again.
Yeah.
There's no consequences. If I did that where I grew up, this 400-person town, I would know who they were. It wouldn't be just like, buddy. It would be like, fuck you, Scotty Lindsay. And then Scotty Lindsay would, like, go to the grocery store and be like, did you know your son just flipped me off? And then by the time I made it to my grandma's, I'd be like, why you flip Scotty Lindsay off? Like, there's consequences. And you have to kind of, like, I think for social survival, maybe there's more incentive to be kinder or be nicer, or I don't know. I don't know. That's part of my theory about that. Because when I encountered that for the first time in, like, L.A. or actually I went to London in college, and that was such a culture shock for a little bit. I went from like Riggins to Spokane, Washington, which that was a big city to me, which is not. It's like a giant small town. Uh-huh. And then went to London and I was on the underground all the time. And I would just, it is a little weird looking back, but I would just start talking to people like, hey, what are you reading? Whatever. Yeah. And they would just look at me like, who? I don't want to join your cult, weirdo. You know, get a, and I'm like, why are these people so mean? But like, but they just face strangers and strangers. They're not seeing the same faces ever. And yeah. I don't know. It just changes it, I guess.
And of course, then you have an American accent. So they're like, oh, yes. Americans.
Oh, I got
here we are.
Here we go.
Here's your, like, got to get in everybody's business. They're so enthusiastic. At least you weren't in France. And I love France and live in France. But that, I mean, if I had done that in France, I think people would have just been like, although, you know what? If you speak French in France, even if you do it poorly,
they appreciate the effort.
Even they love it. They love the effort. And Paris, sure, a little snobby, but like, that's fair. Like, you go to a, you know, hoity toity part of, again, Manhattan or Los Angeles or whatever, like, you may have the exact same experience.
Right.
And it, even in just like the smaller cities of Paris, people lose their minds if you speak French and you're not French, because they know there's no utility to you having learned their language. It is pointless above and beyond just loving that culture, unless you are 100% like an attaché or like, but if you're just a tourist and you speak French, they are like, oh, what? How did this happen? Like, it's
that's
adorable.
Awesome. That's cool.
But in Britain, but in England, you know, it's, but you know, I think there's, but I, it's a, it's absolutely the sort of shock of like, what do you want from me?
Right.
Let's cut to the chase. What are you asking me for? Really?
But before I left, I got so good at doing, I can't do it like that anymore, but I got really good at doing a British accent and could fake that I was from there.
Nice.
And I'll never forget, like, on one of those double-decker buses, like, after the tube shut down at, like, midnight or whatever, you'd have to take the buses back to your wherever you're staying. And there was some drunk, you know, other American college students. And we pretended, my roommate and I, to be pretentious British people who hated American college students. And we, because we knew all the buttons to push.
Yeah.
And we riled them up. So, and then as we left, we were like, just kidding, guys. Have fun. We're Americans, too. that was like my favorite moment over there.
Satisfying.
It was.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
Since the dawn of time, screenwriters have taken months to craft their stories. But now, three Hollywood professionals shall attempt the impossible. Break a story in 1 hour.
That's right. Here on Storybreak, I, Freddie Wong,
Matt Arnold,
and Will Campos,
the creators behind award-winning shows like Video Game High School,
have 1 hour to turn a humble idea into an awesome movie.
Now, an awesome movie starts with an awesome title.
I chose The Billionaire's Marriage Valley.
Mine was Christmas Pregnant Paradise.
Okay, next we need a protagonist.
So I've heard Wario best described as Libertarian Mario.
And of course, every great movie needs a stellar pitch.
In order to get to heaven, sometimes you gotta raise a little hell.
That's the tagline!
Check out Storybreak every week on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. If there's one thing I've learned from living in Los Angeles in an industry that has vastly disparate lifestyles, I have learned that it doesn't matter who you are or what you have, life can just be super stressful. I mean, you may not be feeling down and out or depressed like you're at a total loss, but if your stress is high, and mine often is, you could probably use the chance to unload. Unload it, get it out, talk to someone who's completely unbiased about your life. I cannot say enough good things about therapy and the fact that that is what therapy is for. It's someone who isn't going to judge you or take sides on anything. Honestly, you will be surprised at how much it can help. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, and it's more affordable than in-person therapy. See if it's for you. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and the JV Club listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/JV Club. Have your first session in under 48 hours at betterhelp.com/JV Club. Okay, so you're from Riggins. I have family in both Boise, so I know not to pronounce it Boise.
Me too.
In Boise and in Idaho Falls.
I also have family in both those places.
Are any of them Mormon?
No, but I. But okay, there's a lot so of. Are. But yours are okay. Are mm-hmm. now? Are you Mormon? Are you
well,
LDS?
Well, one of them. I was. I mean, I had to go to church with my mom.
Sure.
On Sundays, and so yes, I'm yeah. certainly like findable in that when you're eight, you. Can't you don't say no?
Right,
you're
of course.
Supposed to be able to say no, like
yeah, you were raised.
Given you
raised
till
in
eight,
that.
Yeah. yeah, you now know at 8 years old, and you now feel socially, you feel the permission to say thanks, mom and dad. Well, in my case, my dad was an atheist, and they were divorced. But
yeah,
to be like, you know, yes, and that is a time in which you are emotionally mature enough to alienate yourself from your family members by saying, I don't think this is for me.
Right.
You might as well just do it when I'm a baby. You might as well just do it. It doesn't make any difference. But yeah, so that, you know, that's, I have my whole, on my mom's side, I have
okay.
a series of cousins, and I feel like it's like, I want to say it's like 65% of the cousins do not observe
oh, okay.
LDS.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other 35 are still like, you know,
yeah.
there's like one child, I'm an only child, but in my, the rest of my aunts and uncles, like I have like one cousin per, it seems, who is like, yes, I do believe in this.
Okay. Okay.
You know, and then
yeah.
everybody else is kind of, that's an, I think there might be two, but
yeah, people,
in general, I feel like it's like, yeah, most people, most of us kind of went like,
right. Yeah. People not from the area that often I find don't know that they, a lot of people refer to Southern Idaho as Northern Utah. It is.
Yes,
it is culturally very, very similar. And
yeah.
no one in my family is. Yeah, kind of similar to you. Half my family atheist, my mom's side, and then the other side it, very mixed, but like Pentecostal, which is a whole.
Oh.
That's an interesting thing.
Yeah, it is.
Not quite snake charmer, but not that far away either.
Uh-huh.
It was a lot.
Like lizard charm. like frog charmers. Cute. A little more cute, a little less harmful.
I love picturing like frog handlers. Some guy like all sweaty and he's got the cheap button-up shirt and he's like, and the Lord sent, and he reaches in a bag of frogs. He will protect me from these frogs. And then people are like, I think everyone's protected from those frogs. No one, they can't hurt you. They literally can't hurt you.
I was like, should we, do you interrupt at all at five that the frogs jumped out and are hopping around? Like,
right.
Being cute, all over the floor. Like, I'm worried about someone's going to step on one of those frogs. Yeah. Wonderful.
But my first girlfriend was LDS and tried to convert me, as one does when you're
you know,
member of one of the churches. And so I researched it a lot, found it fascinating. But yeah, but
It is fascinating.
My arm is covered with religious iconography, so it's like I'm fascinated with religion, but not a religious person.
Yeah.
Interested.
When did that start for you? Was that something that you always kind of had an awareness of, that you were like,
yeah,
fascinating.
My grandpa was my dad's dad before he passed, Pentecostal minister. And so I was introduced to them. And my dad was, you know, kind of like typical preacher's kid, pretty rebellious. So pushed pretty hard. And then also kind of typical preacher's kid, like would go back and forth. Would go to like, nope, that's all. No,
yes,
thank you.
Indeed.
And then would have like a spiritual, like a crisis of faith, and would kind of like pull us back into it a little bit.
Yeah.
And then back out and back in. So it was like always around the periphery. And my grandpa and then his wife, my grandma, very hardcore Christian fundamentalist. And it was just like when I would stay with them, and we weren't that close to that set of grandparents, but I had these, you know, little introductions, and it was just such a different world. And then when I moved, I kind of bounced around a little bit as a kid. But when I was born in Riggins, we went to Alaska for a while, followed my dad's work in construction. And then when I went, after my parents divorced, went back to Riggins. And Riggins had like this little town, two very split groups. Like it was a very small town, very small school. There was no cliques, but there was the religious kids and the kids who weren't religious. And the religious kids were all Christian fundamentalists. There was no other group. There was a, I should say, there was like, five Mormon kids and one Jehovah's Witness kid, like not exaggerating. And then everybody else was basically either atheist or, you know, some variety of Pentecostal, a member of one of the numerous community churches. And so it was just
being the only Jehovah's Witness kid must have been so hard.
Oh,
in a small town.
Oh yeah. Like not people were like, why don't you celebrate your birthday? Why don't you like Christmas? Why don't, you know, I mean, I was so curious. I'm like, why don't you say the Pledge of Allegiance? You know, I mean, it immediately made you an outcast.
Yes.
You know, and then at that age, when you're a kid, you're like, they can't articulate it, but I'm sure in their head they're like, I don't fucking know. My mom. my mom told me not to. I don't know. I don't want God to be mad. Like, they don't have answers.
Oh, my God.
But like, my next door neighbor for a decent chunk of my childhood was the local pastor at this one community church and had, like, a bunch of kids. Some of them were around my age that had a trampoline in their yard. So it was kind of like the neighborhood focal point for the kids to jump on the trampoline. Sure. But that was interesting where they knew I wasn't religious. I mean, I have the weirdest childhood memories of this kid, Paul Emery, who is like a year younger than me or 2 years. Him on one side of this crappy little fence, me on the other, and him doing stuff like, well, if you're not Christian, then you know you're going to go to hell, right? And then I just to rile him up, we like, I know, I am satanic. And then he'd be like, oh! Like he would just like, it would really like freak him out. And I'm like, and I'm going to get your soul, Paul. Like I would and then he would just get so dramatic. But that fascinated me that like, oh, I just found it so interesting that people, like I remember I got kicked out of my youth group. I went to a youth group out of curiosity for a little while and I got permanently banned. Because not for anything outrageous I did, actually. I just wanted to ask questions. And and this lady would bring stuff up and she's like, well, if you're not, you know, you're not Christian and your soul is forsaken. And I was like, well, my great grandpa's a pretty good guy. And, you know, he's really nice and honest and faithful and all these things. And that's weird to me that he would not get to go to heaven, but his neighbor who goes to church but is also abusive to his wife and these other things would get to. That doesn't make sense. And she wouldn't, you know, of course, not have answers. Yeah. And then I would be like, well, what about Buddhists? Because there's a lot of Buddhists and there's a lot of Hindu and they seem like a lot of them are pretty nice. And eventually they made a rule, no more questions, which is so sad.
It's so sad.
And that got my wheels going. And then when I dated that Mormon girl, I've always kind of nerded out about research. And I got really into, I started reading the Book of Mormon, the Blood of Abraham, a lot of their texts. I started digging in, reading, you know, books about them. And I had questions and I brought them to like the bishop. Okay. Is there a bishop at every church?
Yes.
Okay. The bishop, it's been so long.
And that rotates. It definitely could not be me. I'm a woman, but it could be I don't know what the exact requirements are.
Yeah.
But it's a rotating position, unlike a minister or a priest or, you know, a pastor. In the time that I went to church with my mom, I feel like we had like three or four different bishops. One was a stockbroker.
Okay.
One was a banker. We were like the poor people in the wealthy ward.
Okay.
But so that's the other kind of kooky thing about it is that like you can suddenly become the head of your ward and the church and it's this limited period of time. There's like, very democratic. Like it's cool.
Yeah.
But it's also not democratic because like still somebody is saying, God told me that you, you know, are going to be the blah, blah. And so it is. Yeah. So it's different. So I will say this is what I was getting to is too. Bringing that to a bishop, like when they potentially have had zero training on actually how to be the leader of a church and are like, ask questions like that, they're like,
oh, his response was, what he said, I'll never forget it. He goes, you know what? He goes, my wife used to have a lot of these questions because a lot of this didn't make sense to her. And I'll tell you what I told my wife, you just got to have faith in things you don't understand. And like, and even as a 17-year-old, I'm like, well, that's bullshit. Like, because you could apply that to anything. Like you could apply that to Sasquatch, you know, it's like, how come I can't find a Sasquatch? Well, you know, I'll tell you what I told my wife. They're hard to fucking find. And you just got to have faith that they're out there. You know, it's like, and so that, I don't know, I just have been fascinated. And then I studied it in college a little bit, theology classes at Gonzaga and had lots of questions for the priests and everything. And I'm just fascinated that people will put all of their faith into a thing that is inherently illogical and base their life on that. I'm such a pragmatic, logical person. Mm-hmm. It's just such an interesting thing to me. It's like, oh, wow, like you totally, I'm kind of jealous. I'm like, you totally,
I get that.
You
absolutely
totally believe this thing.
Oh, there's
thing.
Something so lovely about it. It's like, well, you win because if you are living your life looking forward to something afterwards and I just can't,
right?
I don't feel confident that that's the case, then I'm terrified of dying and you seem totally cool.
Yep. I thought the same thing.
Awesome.
I'm like, what a great thing. People who are dogmatic and really like, you know, have that conviction about anything, like politically, religiously, I've always been like lived in the place of like nuance, and I just accept that the world is gray and that things are not able to be fully understood, and that, you know, people can be partially right. Rarely is someone fully right.
Right.
And basically I've resigned myself to be like, that kind of sucks, but that's probably how it is.
Right.
And I'm just like, and I'm so jealous of other people, like, oh man, this guy is the best and he knows everything about politics, and this football team, they're clearly the best one ever. And my God, woo-wee, nobody knows life like Mike. And I'm like, oh, you motherfucker, I wish I could.
Right. So I want to go back to the your high school for a second too, because I'm wondering if, you know, I'm interested in the fact that there weren't really necessarily the same kind of cliques that you would get from a larger group with diverse group, etc. But does that extend into like after school activity? Like, the religious kids don't do this and the irreligious kids do drink or do party or do, like, does it sort of, was the town big enough to kind of hold that, like, to where people could get away with it? Underage drinking and stuff, or was it?
There would be a little crossover, but I think it was kind of two groups for the most part. And there was some, because the kind of like the religious groups there were pretty immersive. They would have, you know, things every night, you know, Bible study on this night and youth group on this night. And then there was lots of retreats, like spring break and the summers, all the weird ones. Like, you know, I remember a friend of mine, this one kid, he came back from one and it was basically like an anti-masturbation one. And I was like, wait, what? And he was, and it was like to not self sin. I can't even remember what it was, but there was like all the real weird shit, you know. But like, so it was pretty. I mean, there was like retreat centers nearby because it's way out in the woods of, you know, northern Idaho. So it was a great place for people who want to get off the grid. I mean, around here it's a beautiful area I live in, but for extremists, I mean, it's a perfect area, and there's a lot of them in the woods around here. That have in these little.
Wait, where are you now though? Aren't you in?
I'm in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. So
you were in Coeur d'Alene. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right.
Yeah, that's where we're based.
I don't know why I got Colorado in my head for some reason. It's so bizarre.
I like Colorado, but up here in Coeur d'Alene, like in the periphery, there is still a lot of that. And those kids that they're not partying, they're not doing anything because they got stuff all the time with their church. The church keeps them real busy.
Yeah.
I didn't really do either, actually. I was kind of like an outcast. I mean, it's funny, I was popular enough, you know, plenty with the kids at school. Not that I wasn't well liked, but I knew internally that I didn't really fit in. I was just kind of counting the days in a lot of ways just to get out.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to go immerse myself in the church programs. And also I had equally no interest in getting, you know, an 18 pack of Coors Light and going up some creek and just literally sitting around a campfire with the same kids I go to school with and just getting hammered and talking about things I don't care about more.
Right.
Like it was, I was, college, I went nuts. College, I had a lot of fun. But high school was very much like, oh, when is this over? When is this going to be done?
Yeah. And so when you were 17-ish and you ended up kind of dating the Mormon girl, was there, I wonder if, like, I guess her parents were probably like, well, there was a statistically good chance that you might be interested in someone who's not Mormon since there's like two of us.
Well, she was from a different town. There was a lot of that.
Okay.
She was from Marcin, a little town down by Boise. And then I don't know, that was an interesting thing too. There was interesting things with her family. Her mom, I mean, I haven't said her name or anything, and no one would ever be able to figure this out, but her dad had passed away. Her dad, if I'm remembering this correctly, took his life in prison, and he was prison for molesting her and the other kids in the family. And like the people in the ward knew about it. And it was just like, there was a lot of darkness outside of the, you know, church.
Right.
And her mom was, you know, looking back, just this poor lady just trying to keep things together as best she could. And I think she would just, I don't think she cared that I wasn't Mormon. She was just happy that I didn't seem like I was a dick. And it was like, fine.
Right.
Don't have to worry about that right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Bless their hearts. I feel like that's... that's an uncomfortable reality of a lot of, like, I feel like so much true crime right now, and I am a consumer of much of that.
Yeah.
It feels like, I feel like every other cult leader or every other, like, serial killer, they always come just like somehow they're like, and then they were in the LDS church for a while and da, 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 da. Like, I feel like it's so on the periphery of,
right,
because, and I think probably it's not a reflection necessarily of the church, but it's a reflection of the fact that they are so open and
yeah,
trusting and welcoming that they make great marks. You know what I mean? Like, well, I think they,
yeah,
like, you know, Ted, yeah, Bundy was interested in Mormonism.
Sure.
I think probably because he was like, well, this is a tremendous opportunity for me to fuck with everyone's mind and make everyone,
yeah,
think I was an amazing human being.
I mean,
like, there's how far can I take that?
There's a lot of very intelligent, you know, people, obviously, who are religious, you know, people who have, you know, critical thinking skills, all those things. But if you just look at it, like, analytically, of course, more people are going to be taken advantage of who are deep into, like, kind of more, I would say, heavy religious systems. Where it's like, you know, you take, like, Mormonism, you know, there's this belief in modern prophets, and there's this belief that people, like, you know, the president is like, has the ear of God. And then there's this, you know.
And that you can have your own relationship to God.
Right.
I mean, some religions,
yeah,
are like, you get what you,
yeah,
get,
yep,
from the Lord, from this authority figure.
Right.
And you pray, but you pray one way. You pray,
right,
one way. It doesn't come back.
Yeah,
to
Roman,
you,
Catholicism.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
but yeah, with Mormons, it's like, if you're going to have this belief, and, you know, and it has this almost kind of like, I'm thinking of, like, Lovecraft, right? But almost like a cosmic horror, not cosmic horror, but, like, that thing where you get to be a god in the LDS,
right,
you know, and you get to have your own plan. It's a lot of real kind of, like, extreme ideas that are woven in there. And if you're willing to believe all of those things, and then someone pops into your life and they have extreme things and they have extreme beliefs and they're sharing with you, that door's already open.
Yeah,
you know, like with me, that door's, it's shut pretty hard to most of that stuff. So it's like, my immediate reaction if someone's like, well, you know, and God said, literally, like, the voice inside is like, and shut the fuck up. Like, I'm just like, and really not going to listen to a lot of what you have to say now. I just,
yeah,
no part of me buys it. But I mean, it's so sad because there's so many good people who then get taken advantage of by some monster. And especially, you know, and I've talked about this with, like, to go into, like, pedophilia or whatever, when there's cult leaders or, like, that girl I dated, it's easier to manipulate in certain ways, because if you look at some of the Old Testament stuff, there's some creepy shit in there. Like, there's some stuff like, this guy went to a cave and he fucked his daughters and it was their fault because they got him drunk. It's like, wait, what? I mean, that is just weird incest, molestation stuff. And then so you get somebody who knows, and I've seen it. I've done a lot of cult research for, like, topics. And if almost all of the cult leaders who come out of Christianity, they really study the Bible and they know how to hit certain verses and be like, well, that says that, right? And it says that, right? They're really good at that sales tactic of, what is it? Get three yeses in a row. It's like this common sales tactic of, like, I mean, you want a new car, right? And you deserve a new car, right? And you want to treat yourself right. And you're willing to spend $40,000. And like,
wait, what? What?
Yeah. But they get you saying yes. It's like that.
Yeah, yeah.
They're good at that with, like, they're,
oh,
like,
God, that's so true.
Well, God says this right. And God said that right.
Yeah.
And so that's why I have to put my finger in your butt. You know, it's like,
right.
What? It's like, it's crazy.
Oh no. Okay, so for you it was a sense of, like, okay, this will be over at some point.
Yes.
Did you have stuff that you were sort of, that you were influenced in from the outside, like music and movies and books? Like, was there stuff that sort of gave you that reminder of, like, yeah, this moment that I'm in right now is not necessarily where all storytelling comes from, or
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, to feel like this exists beyond this point, and what's the next step to, like, kind of getting me closer to the pop culture stuff that I really like? Or,
yeah,
you know,
God, you know, I didn't, man, I that's awesome.
It wasn't like you were sitting listening to, like Soundgarden going, like, he gets me. He gets,
oh, right,
me at least.
And I did listen to, a lot of Soundgarden, and, you know, that was, like, the grungy.
That's so funny. I'm glad I picked someone good.
Yeah, Louder Than Love and then Bad Motorfinger. But, yeah, I did listen to that stuff. I think what helped me want to get out was my freshman, sophomore year of high school. I went to go live with my dad. I after the divorce, moved with my mom to Riggins. My dad ended up in Vegas. I went to go live with my dad in Vegas, and I went to a big high school for 2 years, and then randomly he moved back to Riggins, so I was brought back.
Okay.
But at least, and I didn't love school in Vegas either, but at least I got to see more of the world. And I'm like, oh, this is so different than what I'm used to. And there's so many different people and different things to do. And then I didn't actually have a mentor. I mean, I loved all this, you know, music. I've always been really into music. But actually, I didn't think like, oh, I can get out there and then I can maybe connect with these kind of people.
Right.
I wish it, looking back, it's kind of funny. I wish I would have had more of a plan. I didn't know what I wanted to do once I got out. I just knew that I wanted to get out. I just wanted to get to the next place. And then when I got there, it was, I don't even know that it was everything I wanted it to be because I didn't know what it was going to be.
Yeah.
But it was such, I remember the feeling of like when I went to college, it felt like a fish that had finally been dropped in water, you know, like put back in the water. It just felt like I'm like, I can breathe. These people like to talk about what I want to talk about. And they like, I just didn't have, the kids were fine where I grew up. There was nothing wrong with them. But we just didn't share, they didn't care about Soundgarden. They didn't care.
Right.
And not the way I would, you know, and this is like a weird thing to throw into this randomly, but I've taken all these online tests. I also think I'm probably pretty autistic in some ways. And and just from things that my son is like the same way. And so, you know, there was nothing wrong with them not wanting to really geek out on stuff. Like I was into baseball cards. So were some of my friends. My friends didn't lay out all the cards on the floor and memorize the stats. Because they found that they found that soothing, but like
yeah.
So, but in college, like I found other people who really wanted to geek out on the same stuff, and it's like that just was just made me so happy.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, I think there is something to be said. Well, it's funny too because in some ways, you know, and I am totally talking out of my ass, but the little understanding I have of sort of the discussion in science about where meditation takes your brain, where prayer can take your brain, where other things that sort of create this feeling of well-being or create this feeling of peacefulness could be something as like for you, it could be like praying could give you the same could give someone else the feeling that for you memorizing those stats gave you, because it's like there's a sort of I don't want to say incantation, but there's like a ritual to it, right? That there's a sense of like my brain knows what to do here. I'm in gear. I fall into this gear, and something other stuff relaxes, and so that's something that feels satisfying.
That makes sense.
Know what I mean? Like from a scientific perspective.
Yeah, yeah. I was just joking in my head, thinking about like what a sad church I've chosen to belong to. like my God is like Barry Bonds seasons in the 90s. You know, where I'm like, his slugging percentage, oh boy. but yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense, that comfort. And because I actually still, to this day, I check a variety of stats sites. Just as like a little palate cleanse for my brain. I like to just zone out for 2 minutes. I'm like, okay, all right, he's having a good 3-point percentage. Okay, their winning percentage seems pretty solid. It's like, and then I can kind of like move on. But it is very peaceful. Like what I like about it is the numbers, they don't lie. The numbers, they're not confusing. Like humans can be so confusing to me. But like numbers, I'm like, yep, that number, I know exactly why that number exists. I know why it gets there, and it's true. It's 100% accurate.
Yeah.
And it's just that's what's soothing about it. But I can see how if you took that to some ethereal place and you're like, I always know that God is there and that God is listening and that God, you know, like, and, okay, yeah, that's I never made that comparison before.
Well, that's what I'm here to do, blow everyone's minds with my extraordinarily limited references.
No, that makes sense, though, why the comfort it would give people. I never thought about it giving them the same comfort it gives me, but more so, because I don't think like with the stats, I'm not like, okay, and that's a solid batting average and he's in the race for the Triple Crown. And if I just memorize these, I get to go to heaven and live with my family forever.
Right.
Like, that's a great extra step.
Totally, totally.
Oh, man, I wish I had that. Yeah.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Hey, I'm Jordan Morris, creator of the Max Fun scripted sci-fi comedy podcast, Bubble. We just released a special episode of Bubble to celebrate the launch of our new graphic novel. At SF Sketchfest in 2019, we recorded a live show with Allison Becker, Eliza Skinner, Mike Mitchell, Cristela Alonso, and special guests Jean Grey, Jonathan Colton, Jesse Thorne, Nick Weiger, and a bunch of other cool folks.
We suspect he'll show signs of mutation when in a state of excitement. Now, Annie matched with him on Tinder, so she's going to act as the honeypot.
I do enjoy being called a honeypot.
Hey, you know what's better than honey? Gravy.
Oh, yeah, can I be the gravy sack?
Out now on MaximumFun.org and wherever you get podcasts. And pick up the graphic novel at your local bookstore today.
Janitors, it's time for Janet's beautiful made-in sharp knife report. If you've been following this sequence as closely as I'm sure you have been, you know that I received my own beautifully crafted artisanal knife with its gorgeous red handle. Several weeks ago, I have been using it nonstop. I hate to say this, but we had a similar knife that was relegated to a drawer where all things I don't use in my kitchen anymore go. So I'm so sorry, old knife, that you've been replaced by Made In. But I don't like to break up with a knife without explaining a little bit more. Here's the thing. It's just that they source the finest materials and partner with renowned craftspeople to make premium kitchen tools available directly to you without the markup. Knife, what was I supposed to do? Made In products are made to last and they offer a lifetime guarantee. Their cookware distributes heat evenly and can easily go from the stovetop to the oven. And their knives... are fully forged, perfectly balanced, and stay sharp. Now, I know it seems like I'm just rubbing your nose in this old knife, but that's the reality. Now, what can janitors do? Right now, Made In is offering our listeners 15% off your first order with promo code JVCLUB. This is the best discount available anywhere online for Made In products. Go to madeincookware.com/JVCLUB and use promo code JVCLUB for 15% off your first order. That's madeincookware.com/JVCLUB. Use promo code JVCLUB. Oh, please, I can see that you're crying. Let me wipe those tiny knife tears. Before I jump into our MASH game, I feel like I have to ask a question that I get asked, that I think everyone who's funny gets asked, which is like, was part of your feeling like slightly disconnected from your community, especially as a teenager and as a kid when we're sort of figuring out who we are or how to project our image in the world. Was being funny kind of part of that for you?
Yeah.
Or were you? Yeah. So it wasn't like you weren't, because every once in a while I'll meet someone who's like, oh, yeah, people can't believe I became a comedian, or people can't believe I do funny stuff because I was so quiet. They never knew I was funny or whatever. Versus me, I was a wise ass. So people.
Oh, OK. I was quiet. I mean, people knew I was, but okay. My first high school for the 2 years, no one did know I was funny. No one thought I was funny, except for maybe like three or four friends, you know, like a very small group. And then because I went to such a small high school back in Riggins, people knew I like, there's like, you know, 20 kids in a class kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or in a grade. So, you know, that way I was able to kind of have my little inside jokes. I was always the person who could adapt quickly to someone's sense of humor and just like have that kind of connection. Mm-hmm. But I was never the get in front of the class and make everyone laugh.
Gotcha.
And I'm still kind of like that. Like still kind of like if you put me in a green room with a bunch of other comics, I'm not going to be the center ever.
Got it.
Yeah.
That makes so much sense to me. I mean, like that's a really good way of putting it, because that's so true. And I feel like I could, in my head, I'm doing a little baseball card organizing in my head right now of like, oh, the stand-ups, in particular stand-ups. Like the stand-ups I know, like a lot of them are would be the quiet one in the green room. They wouldn't be holding court. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
That's very interesting. Okay, let's get into this MASH game. The first category that I'm going to ask you to come up with three answers, wishful answers, this is one that I always do every MASH game. In this reality that we're creating, in this alternate universe that we're creating in our MASH game, nothing that you can eat is bad for you. Nothing's bad for the planet.
Oh.
Nothing's bad. Everything becomes like healthy, great, and you can have it in perpetuity at the snap of your finger. So if you want to eat, you know, 5 cases of Baby Ruth's, you'll never feel sick.
You won't feel
it's
sick.
Not that, it's not the only thing that you have.
Okay.
It's just whatever 3 things you want that you're like, I would love to have that whenever I wanted it and nothing would happen.
Okay. And it's 3 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Maple bars.
Great.
And mashed potatoes with brown gravy. Is that 2 things or was it 1 thing?
I count it as 1 thing. Absolutely.
Okay. And
listen, I'm not going to make you separate out your condiments. I'm just not that kind of person. I'm not a monster.
And oh man, oh no, I blew it.
Are you regretting making one of your decisions?
Well, I wanted to work chocolate in, but I like those things so much, and I also like steak so much.
Okay.
But but nothing's gonna make me sick in this world, so I'm not gonna feel like, I'm not gonna get like hypoglycemic because I have so much chocolate.
Nope.
Okay, then I guess, you know what? I will make my third thing dark chocolate with hazelnuts inside.
Oh, wonderful.
No, I want to change it.
Oh, okay, great.
Devil's food cake instead. I forgot. I forgot that I can eat it. I can eat it endlessly, and it's not going to make me sick. Okay.
Yes. Yes. I'm just putting devil's F if I don't remember what that stands for. Great. Okay. Next category. Let's do three movies that you can jump into and be in whenever you want. And it's not about reliving the plot. It's just about the vibe or the world that's been built inside that movie. Mm. And, you know, you're in a safety bubble. So, you know, if you pick, for example, The Godfather is still a popular answer, you're not going to get yourself shot up. Like, you're in no danger.
Oh,
so if you're
like,
you're a horror movie buff and you sort of like the vibe of a horror movie, your life is not at stake. I guess unless you want it to be.
Right. No, I don't want my life to be at stake. I'll do Tombstone. Would be my Wild West world.
Great.
And also, it's almost the same words, West world.
Okay, great.
And then, so those are both Westerns. And then the next one, Lord of the Rings.
Great. That's good because that's almost like when you wish for more wishes because there's so many different worlds inside
Middle-earth.
Of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. A lot of magic there.
That's great. Okay, next category. Let's do three places in the world that you would love to have a second home. Could be vacation home or could be like work home. Like I have a bustling life in London. Three places that you would like to have a second home, and we'll pretend like we can kind of teleport you there. So getting there is not an issue.
Okay. Oh man, there's so many cool places in the world. It doesn't matter if you've been there or not, right? Just like it was like a
doesn't
fantasy.
Matter.
So
yeah, it definitely doesn't matter.
Okay. Well, I want one per place to be an island, so I'll go New Zealand.
Great.
I'm trying to think of the city. I don't know. Every city I see in New Zealand looks like a place I'd want to live. So I'll say Auckland. I don't know.
Great.
And then
I have spent a little bit of time in Auckland three different occasions.
Yeah,
and
lucky.
I absolutely love it.
Oh. It looks so cool.
Especially for someone who's from a smaller town, because it is one of those cities like Spokane where people who have lived there their whole lives are like, why would you ever want to live here? It's so small. But you're like, no, but I didn't grow up here.
Yes.
And I will always, like, from here forward, I will be very happy here.
Right.
You know?
I love that when you grow up in a small town, the appreciation you have. I think about that. It's carried over my whole life where, you know, it's like for so many years, I would get excited. And I still kind of, on a weird level, get excited by like a food court. I'm like, what? Yeah. Six options in one room? Have I died and gone to heaven? Yeah. because when you grow up in such a tiny town, you're like, that's not a thing.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, and so then a big city. I will pick London, actually. I had so much fun over there. And then, okay, so I got London. I got New Zealand. And now someplace more... Okay. My brain takes these so seriously. Like, I'm just going to ruin everything if I pick the wrong place.
Oh, I know. That's one of the best yet worst things about it is that suddenly it feels like really,
really, really high stakes all of a sudden.
A thing that you didn't even know you gave a shit about like 5 minutes ago now is like, this is my life we are talking about.
I only get three places. I have to live there the rest of my life. third place. Oh, man. New Orleans. There we go.
Great.
Yes.
Okay. Awesome. All right. Next one. Let's do... Okay. I'm going to separate... I have two categories in mind for you, and they could almost overlap, but I'm going to keep them separate. The first one is three mysteries in the world that you get to know the answer to.
Oh.
And then but the second one is more like three paranormal things that you wish were for sure real.
Okay, awesome. So the three mysteries, I do want to know the story behind the assassination of JFK.
Let's get it out there once and for all.
Right, definitively. I would love to know that. And then this next one would just be more to shut other people up than I care, but Area 51. I don't think anything's there. I just want people to stop worrying about it.
Yeah.
And then, oh, the third mystery. I do want to know who Jack the Ripper was.
Oh, that's a good one too. Yeah.
It's annoying that like no one's probably ever going to figure it out.
It is annoying.
Yeah.
It's annoying. I know, for some reason, this feels like a small word to use, but it truly is annoying. It's truly annoying. It was a long time ago.
Right. It was a long time ago.
It was a very long time ago. And it is very annoying. Right. Like, who was he? Come on.
Who was he? And then paranormal things that get to be real? Is that what the...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, or... Mm. I mean, it could also be like... It could be either... Well, it seems like you do... I mean, I guess it seems more like you don't really think that any of them are. Like, there are people I know who truly believe in aliens and are like, I wish they weren't real because it makes me very scared. And I'm like, I let me try to help you. I think we would know. But like, you know what I mean? Or like people who are like, ghosts are 100% real and they mean us harm.
Oh,
so I was going to give you the option of like, you know for sure they aren't real, but you seemed like a skeptic enough that I thought it would be fun if we could actually do the opposite and make something real.
And I'm pretty open to that stuff actually, where my thing is I'm open to, same with actually kind of going back to religion. I do think there's some creative force out there. I do think there's probably mathematically some extraterrestrial stuff somewhere out there. I think based on like looking through a lot of paranormal, like ghost type stuff, there's something that is we don't understand yet.
Right.
I just doubt most specific examples.
Indeed.
And I doubt certainty. When someone's like, oh, let me tell you about aliens. There's the planet Xenu. Now, the Pleiadians, they fly pretty well, but not as good as the Grays. It's like, come on, you don't know that.
Right.
Okay, so it gets to be real. I do want to know that aliens are real because that makes me excited about the, you know, possibilities of just how big our universe is.
Agreed.
And they were not 100%. And they were not alone.
Yes.
And then another paranormal thing, just because I think it's funny, this is not an important creature, but I do think it's funny if Sasquatch is real.
Yeah.
Like he's so fucking good at hiding that, you know, and somehow having his remains not be found. I mean, that would be so impressive for this. And he's not small. He's like a big creature and they have to mate. They have to make other Sasquatches and they do all that so covertly. That's just beyond impressive to me.
Yeah.
And then the third one, as scary as it is, I do like to think about ghosts. So that would be interesting to know definitively that ghosts are out there.
Well, in two of these, you know, you've sort of given folks who maybe don't feel that, don't get the comfort from religion, the idea of something bigger or something that stretches beyond, you know, our basic understanding of the world that we walk around in. So I mean, I think it's all great. And please, I would love for Sasquatch to be real.
That'd be so funny.
It'd be so amazing for all the people that believed in him to be like, ah,
right. Ah, yes.
Okay. All right. Next one. All due respect to your wonderful wife.
Sure.
In the there's always a romantic three people. They can be cartoon characters. They can be, you know, Meryl Streep circa 1980. They can be whatever you want. Three, and this is for romantic and or sexy times.
Okay, yeah, and she's not jealous that way. I would say Betty Page. I like pinup art, and she was my favorite kind of pinup model. Even though she got weird when she got old, and she and then she hated it. Do you know that about Betty Page? It's such a bummer.
She did.
Oh, so ashamed of everything. She got really religious later in life and was disgusted by everything she did that made her an icon, which is such a bummer to have to kind of, you know, die that way, to live your last. But anyway, her randomly, Rosario Dawson. I've had her, like, she just seems cool.
Agreed.
She seems very tough.
Agreed.
Just all the things.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree. I feel just the same way about Rosario Dawson.
And then third one. Oh, man. I'm never good at this. Like, when people are like, even my wife are like, who? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what my brain goes here because, like, when I was younger, I thought this. And she does seem really cool again. I would say Jennifer Aniston.
Okay, great.
I like her in interviews. She seems like, despite how famous she's become, she doesn't seem too affected.
Yeah.
And how famous she's been for so long. But I don't know. But that being said, if people are out there, they know a lot more about her than I do. They're like, well, if you listen, I don't know. Just from the little I've seen.
I've never heard anything bad. I mean, yeah. I really haven't. I've only heard good things. Okay. Next category, let's do three skills that you wake up with tomorrow and you sort of downloaded it Matrix style. So all of a sudden you're an expert.
Ooh, three skills that I can download tomorrow. Like, not like superhero stuff. Like regular human life skills.
I would say regular I would say regular stuff. Mm. But if you feel strongly about the superhero power, okay. We can finish off with that category.
I can pick regular life stuff. Okay. Ooh, so I debate if this would be a curse or a blessing, but I don't have the greatest memory. At least I don't think I do. And I am constantly trying to absorb new information, but I wish more of it would stick.
Yes, indeed.
So, so if I had that total recall kind of memory, I guess that would be a skill. And then I wish I was super tech savvy when my stuff breaks.
Oh, me too.
It's just the rage. I keep waiting for it to fade as I get older. I'm like, when is this murderous rage going to go away because my phone won't reboot? Like, it's like the littlest thing. And I'll go from like happy, everything is great. And then I'm like, hell, let me send the email. Okay, just 1 second. Come on. Just, what the fuck? Like, it's just like so, it's.
It really, no, it is. It's like the road rage thing. Yeah, it's like, oh, we
so
are
irrational.
All just hanging on by the smallest thread. Like, how are we all just hanging on by the smallest thread that we explode over something like that?
And so tech skills would be great. And then, I wish I was a good cook.
Great. I'm putting chef.
Chef.
No,
ooh, I like chef. I would like to
I'm
be able to.
Putting it in there like, yeah. We're talking chef level.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Okay, great. And then final category, let's do. This is where I put the pressure on myself. Like, oof, what wonderful category should I have thought of that I didn't get to? And this is going to be a crushing blow to us
all. Got to close strong. Got to close strong or everyone's going to leave disappointed.
Let's see. What about just like collaborations? Like, it doesn't have to be specifically like, I wish I could do a podcast with this dead person. It could be like, but it certainly could be that. But it could also be like, listen, I'm no sculptor, but I would totally, you know, let's assume I am and I can collaborate with Rodin on this.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. Like, so three collaborations with any kind of creative person from any era.
Okay.
That would be cool to fulfill.
I would love to. Write a graphic novel with Garth Ennis.
Great.
I would love to write a horror novel with Stephen King.
Oh yeah, nice.
Oh my gosh, he seems so cool. And then maybe
and he likes doing that. Like, it's how cool is he?
Yeah.
And he's like, and then I decided to write this thing with this other person, and we built this whole world together. And that's
And then music wise. I'm trying to think of what musician would be so fun to collaborate with. I think Eddie Vedder seems like a pretty cool dude.
Agreed.
And he is, I know they're not as commercially successful, but they've been so good for so long. He just seems like a
Agreed.
Cool guy.
I couldn't agree more. Okay. Music. Great. All right. Give me a word that you feel, just a single word that you feel describes the way you feel when you're having like just a great day with your wife.
Hmm. Single word.
Mm-hmm. You're like surprised.
I know that would be funny. Shocked, honestly. No. Content.
Great. Great, great, great. Okay. Will you please extol our listeners with all of the various things they should be, if they're not already, knowing about you, following, listening to, all that good stuff. And that's and I will be figuring out this 100% guaranteed alternate universe MASH existence for you.
Thank you.
While that's happening.
I would just say if you want to find the different things I work on, just if you go to dancummins.tv, that will link to the other places. And there's Time Suck is one podcast. Scared to Death is another. Is We Dumb is a third. And that's
great. It's a great title, by the way. I mean, you know it, but it is.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. So those, and then just what those are, Time Suck is a deep dive on true crime, cults, historical figures, historical important moments, just one a week. Like we just did true crime. We did Fred and Rose West, two of the worst people ever. These British serial killers, a couple recently.
Oh, that's right. Those guys.
Oh, so dark. So much incest. And then Operation Greenup is one coming out. That's a really cool, the real life Inglourious Basterds. So we do some cool like you know, awesome moments of these guys are fighting Nazis and successfully, and it's super cool. And then Scared to Death is just campfire tale horror every week. I love ghost stories. I love supposedly true ghost stories. And I tell two to my wife every week, and then she tells two listener tales to me, and we try and scare each other. And
great.
Yeah, it's fun. And then Is We Dumb is just like Recess. It's just making fun of ourselves for being stupid and making fun of my co-host Joe and I and making fun of stupidity on the internet. And it's become this weird confessional where like I'm like kind of embarrassed like how many weeks in a row where I'm like, God, I did something really stupid again this week. Yet again. Needlessly risked my family's safety or, you know, whatever.
Keeps you honest. Keeps
yes,
you honest.
Yes.
Keeps you humble. Keeps you honest. However, that being said, you very well may get a big head about all these amazing things that are going on in this MASH future.
Oh.
Not the least of which is your, well, first of all, I just want to thank you for clearing up this whole Area 51 thing. Like, just let's all take a breath because we now know that there are, in fact, So Area 51, we can put that one to bed, everybody.
Yeah.
We can put that one
Great.
To bed. I want to congratulate you on the horror novel
Ooh.
That you and Stephen King are collaborating on. I think that's going to be absolutely outstanding. I want to also say that your house in London sounds like a wonderful place to get away. I feel like Stephen King's probably going to be like, you know what, I'm going to fly over.
Yeah.
We're going to do some work on the London side.
Stay in the guest room.
Wander around in some fog. It's going to be great. you are not going to have any problems with, like, if you have a great idea, or even if, like, you sort of are pulling from your own, as many writers do, your own past or experiences or things you noticed, things you saw, I want you to rest assured you don't have to worry about having forgotten them because you have this amazing memory.
Oh.
So you're able to call all of that stuff back whenever you need, which I think is probably extraordinarily useful for writing. So you have that going for you. You also have the ability to, when you want to have a little adventure that is outside of the normal realm, you can jump into Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
And hang out with all those characters and be in that beautiful, magical place. It depends on where you are, but I feel like there are a lot of beings in that world that would enjoy the unlimited mashed potatoes and gravy that you have access to. Snap of your fingers, zero ramifications. So they all thank you for that as well. I want to congratulate you on your, listen, you, this is your opportunity. If you choose to stay with her as she ages, we're giving a reset on Betty so that she's not going to regret. She's not going to have all these regrets and like feel shame and hate herself, because you're going to be right there at her side telling her she's delightful and that she needs waste no more time even thinking about that. And that what she really should be concerned about is ghosts, because they are real. With any luck, most of them are kind, but they're real. They're out there. We can stop wondering. That opens the door to the whole idea of like us getting to sort of be who we are in some other form after our bodies have died, which I think is very satisfying and interesting. And I think that is it. Yes, that completes your MASH future.
That's a good future.
A lot of good stuff in there. The only thing, Dan, that I do offer up as a sort of close to the podcast only during the summer is if you feel that you can sing off the top of your head a snippet of Don Henley's Boys of Summer, if there's any part of that song that you can think of or familiar with or can fake, I welcome you to do that. I also welcome you to sing any little part of any song that you associate with the summer if Don Henley is not immediately popping to mind.
Oh, man. I just listened to that song the other day. It is such a great song. Oh, but now the melody won't come to my head. It's like, Boys of Summer. That's not it at all.
No, that's close. I mean, you didn't sing very much of it, so I can't tell you how off it was. So that was actually very clever on your part.
I'm picturing Don Henley post-Eagles, kind of end of the innocence era. Picturing him. He's got like a cool jacket on.
Uh-huh.
He's got great hair. but I can't. Let me do a different. That's almost yacht rock. Boys of
agreed.
Summer.
Yes, Absolutely agree.
So what's, sailing, take me away, bop, 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 don't know the other words.
Great.
Da, 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 da. I know it's Christopher Cross. I know he won a Grammy. He beat out Pink Floyd. But I can't, when the pressure's on, come up with the words.
It was all there. It was all there. I loved every moment of it. Thank you. This has been so much fun. Thank you so much, Janet. Dan. Everybody, check out all the wonderful podcasts that you can get from Dan and his cohort. And everybody else, I will talk to you next time on the podcast.
Thank you, Janet.
The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Hey, remember when we could save kittens from trees or lunch on skyscrapers, bring the villains to their knees? Maybe we should move someplace new and build time machines to go and get us back.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.